From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1997 in the Fordham Law Review. The review was taking a look at hiring practices and, in particular, opportunities for women of color. Harvard Law School, despite its prestige and reputation, had a terrible record when it comes to diverse hiring. Through the mid-90s, Harvard had never hired a woman of color. But that had changed, according to both Harvard and the Fordham Law Review. In a piece titled Intersectionality and Positionality, Situating Women of Color in the Affirmative Action Dialogue, Laura Padilla wrote the following, quote, "There are few women of color who hold important positions in the academy, Fortune 500 companies, or other prominent fields or industries. This is not inconsequential. Diversifying these arenas, in part by adding qualified women of color to their ranks, remains important for many reasons. For one, there are scant women of color as role models. In my 3 years at Stanford Law School, there were no professors who were women of color. Harvard Law School hired its first woman of color, Elizabeth Warren, in 1995. End quote. But wait, how did the Fordham Law Review conclude that Elizabeth Warren was a woman of color? Why, if Harvard was truly concerned with improving its hiring practices, was it claiming that it had finally made progress only to have a white woman claim some kind of diversity status? Harvard claims to this day that Elizabeth Warren did not get the job because she claimed to be Native American. But Warren did, in fact, refer to herself as having a Native American background for years. President Trump, of course, has taken the opportunity to hurl racist and childish taunts at her, calling her Pocahontas, of course. By now, you probably know that Warren tried to quell this controversy by releasing the results of a DNA test, which are not known to be perfect science. The tests indicate that somewhere between 6 and 10 generations ago, Warren probably had a Native American ancestor, and that makes her, maybe, fractionally related to a line of Native peoples. Now, Senator Warren thought that by releasing this test, it would prove that her mother's family was part Native American. Instead, it provoked even more mocking and racist taunts. Senator Lindsey Graham said that he wanted to take a DNA test because he thinks he has more Native American in him than Warren. And then he added that he worried that the DNA test would show something terrible, like maybe he was part Iranian. That's the world we're in now. We could talk about how silly it is to try to reason with schoolyard taunts, but this hour we want to discuss what ancestry means, I should say, what identity really means, particularly for Native Americans. Let's have a conversation this hour. Our guests include Ronnie Pollock, who's a member of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, Eagle Clan, an executive director of the Native American Cultural Center, and host of Two Canoes with Ronnie Pollock on WYSL 92.1. Ronnie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
Also with us is Ron Garrow, Akwesasne Mohawk Bear Clan and cultural advisor for Surge Rock, standing up for racial justice. Ron, welcome back to the program. To you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, very good to have you. Roger Doobie is here. Roger is a fellow in the American Indians Science and Engineering Society and with the Mohawk Bear Clan.
Turtle Clan.
I'm sorry, Roger. Turtle Clan. Thanks for being here, Roger. I appreciate it. And Jordan Doobie, Roger's son's on the line with us, who first reached out to us yesterday, saw a lot of this going on, and we've heard from Jordan in the past, moved out west. Where are you now, Jordan, by the way?
Out in Portland.
Well, it's great to have you. Thanks for taking the time to join the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Michael Oberg is a distinguished professor of history at SUNY Geneseo and author of Native America, A History. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Alan.
I just want to start by asking for some broad assessments from our guests, and I just kind of want to listen to where you stand on what you've seen from Elizabeth Warren. And, we should point out that she did say in the video she released, quote, "I'm not enrolled in a tribe and only tribes determine tribal membership," end quote. But she did say that this is a way to indicate that she hasn't been lying about her ancestry. And I want to know I'll start with Ronnie Pollock. What do you make of that?
I feel that it's hurtful. You know, it's like she's made a mockery of our ancestry, of our heritage. It's now become this laughing matter, so to speak, on a broader perspective across our entire country and perhaps even globally as well, too. And why it's hurtful for me specifically is because, for her trying to claim this as her own identity, my own mother, when she married my father, who is non-Indigenous, she was disenfranchised. She actually lost her identity as a Native American because she married a non-Native. So, I mean, imagine being stripped of your own identity because you, you know, are marrying outside of your people. This was an unfortunate tactic that the government was using at that time to try and, I don't know, for lack of a better term, thin the herd, so to speak. And that was hurtful. So for my mom, who completely lost her identity as a Native American, and then for somebody to come in and try and claim that identity as a means of their own selfish gain, you know, it's really disrespectful and disheartening, to say the least.
Okay. Ron, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure, because it depends on a couple factors. If she did it to self-promote her and to gain some sort of notoriety and for self-promotion and knowingly that she did not have Native heritage, then that's a bad thing. And it's, you know, it's wrong. But I think she may have just, it may have happened accidentally. She just knows what she knows. I mean, her mother told her that she was Native American, and that's what she's been going by. And she's just telling people, unless she's actually harmed a person by taking away their scholarship money for school or something similar to that, I don't really understand how it's anything other than an accident.
Okay. Roger Doobie.
So I agree with both Ron and Ronnie. It's not clear to me what her motivation was in making this assertion. It seems pretty clear that there was not a point in her career where that was used to her advantage. Fox News, I believe, just a couple of days ago released a report that showed that Harvard did not actually give her any benefit as a result of this assertion. She wasn't preferentially admitted, et cetera. So I think she probably didn't hurt anyone. However, by doing this and asserting it in a political environment that's as charged as it is, it pulls the very damaged Native American history into the political arena. And so all of us are now like, well, gee, so how much Native American are you? And all of a sudden, these questions are being asked to those of us that are either involved, enrolled, or otherwise directly active in Native communities. And that's not really what we should be doing. We should really be focused on doing what we can for those communities.
And let me just follow up briefly with Roger. When you say it's not clear that she – her employment status hurt anybody, I think it's probably going to be impossible to know for sure. Mm-hmm. And the reason I started by reading the Fordham Law Review is, if you're Harvard and you have a dreadful record on hiring women of color, people of color, you know, maybe you would have hired Elizabeth Warren anyway, and that's their claim. And their claim is they hired her. They considered her a white woman at the time. They hired her on the merits. Mm-hmm. Okay, all well and good. Somehow, she was promoted as a woman of color. And we do know that in the previous year, she wanted to be listed as having Native American heritage. Mm-hmm. So at some point, her decision to focus on that in a professional context did lead Harvard to signal to Fordham and probably everybody else, hey, at least we've got a woman of color, which, you know, let's also be honest, too. Organizations sometimes feel they pat themselves on the back when they hire one. Mm-hmm. Well, they had zero. I'm not sure that we will possibly know exactly that nobody was hurt, is kind of
sure,
what I'm saying.
Sure.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Keep in mind that these institutions, the university that I work for, Geneseo, et cetera, are under a lot of pressure from the federal government to demonstrate that they're not discriminating, they've got good diversity, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of pressure. They are typically the ones that are responsible for defining what they mean by diverse. And so they set the bar that says, must a Native American person be enrolled, or can they simply self-identify? And that clip level changes the results that they get. That's not something in our control. That's a federal government control. It's imposed on everybody, and it's not something that we work with. Those things probably have had some impact as her career moved forward. But she's working within the parameters of the environment that she's been handed. As I said, the universities are given these measurements, and they have to work within those parameters as well. Native Americans are a tiny fraction of the country. We are not a large population by any means. And so identifying people that have that background, that have the skills, that match the qualifications necessary for a technical or professional job, that's a rare thing. And when you find something like that, you typically want to grab onto that and hope that that's the right thing to do.
Jordan, agree or disagree with your dad?
Well, it's a weird position to be put in, but I'm going to have to say I kind of disagree, to be honest.
Way to go, Jordan.
No, yes, kids are used to disagreeing with their parents. That's why I thought it would be easy. Go ahead.
Okay, cool, great. Yeah, the problem with all of this is that it's Native American identity is such a complicated issue in general because it can encompass so many different things. You can be Native American, or you can have that Native American ancestry without being involved in the community, without having sort of a typical Native experience growing up. You can be involved in the community, like myself, but you've had to like fight for it. You've had to sort of reconnect to that opportunity because I was raised in South Florida, where there's no Mohawk population or Abenaki population, and I had to like move to New York and reconnect with my community and kind of rediscover those that ancestral, I guess, roots. That's a weird way of putting it, but like that cultural connection. You can be enrolled in the community and like be living in the city. You can be far away from your community itself. You can be living on the reservation. So the concept of like a sort of singular idea of a Native American identity is a really difficult thing to nail down, especially because of, I guess, sort of our pretty unique political situation in that we're asked to prove our ancestry all the time. Almost every time someone meets me and I tell them that I'm Native American, there's always this question like, so how much? And that's a really weird thing to try to answer because I'm Native, I'm Mohawk, but my mother's Jewish, my dad's Mohawk and Abenaki, and I consider myself Mohawk, and I'm involved in the community, I'm learning my language, but at the same time, there's always this pressure for me to try to prove myself. Elizabeth Warren has, to my knowledge, not been involved with the community, and I think she goes on and sort of explains that, too, that she has that ancestry there, and, you know, that's fine, but to identify that way I forget who said it. I'm sorry. I can't see anyone's faces through the phone. But someone did say that it's frustrating because it is such a difficult thing to assert yourself as a Native American in a modern society, especially if you don't look Native in a very typical sense. And to have someone say, like, no, but I'm Native American. And kind of receive benefits for that, even to have like an organization say like, look at this, we have a person who for all intents and purposes looks white, claim Native American heritage and receive this sort of boost to their prestige that way, I guess you could say, without actually going on to like sort of taking the time to really find someone who's an actual person of color and hiring them in the organization.
And she didn't, you're right. She has not said that she has connected throughout her life actively with the community. She's just acknowledging part of the heritage. Professor Oberg, what do you think?
I'm so disappointed in Elizabeth Warren. And I think the comments you've heard here taken together really get to a lot of the key issues across a very long history. And I think it's worth keeping in mind that in Canada and in the United States, both of these countries sought to eradicate American Indian identity, the Indian Act and marrying out and the 60s scoop in Canada, boarding schools, things like that. And so to have Warren come along and essentially play Indian, whatever she did, she was essentially performing in a way. Whether she got benefits or not, I'm not inclined to be very, very forgiving for that. And I think she has some damage to undo. And one issue that I haven't heard people here bring up that I think is worth talking about is that one of the things here is that Native nations are different than other ethnic groups and racial groups in the United States. And one I don't think there's another ethnic group that has to spend so much time proving who they are, right? The kind of questions that Jordan's getting, right? How much or stuff like that. That's an old problem. The other thing is that Native nations are nations, and that nationhood predates the existence of the United States, right? You look at the United States Constitution. We want to pretend the Constitution matters. It doesn't seem like that very much anymore, but Article 1, Section 8 of the United States, we the people gave to the United States government the right to regulate commerce with the Indian tribes. That nationhood matters. Elizabeth Warren has claimed Native American heritage. No Native Americans have claimed her. She's not a member of any kind of nation, and I think that matters significantly. And you know, I don't want to speculate too much about what she was thinking. It seems that she was goaded into, much like Charlie Brown trying to kick the football, that Donald Trump goaded her into doing something that wasn't in her best interest. She gave, a very good speech in February of 2018 to the National Congress of American Indian, trying to put these issues to rest. And in her damage control subsequent to this DNA test thing, she said much of the same things she said in that NCAI speech. But it is damaging to talk in terms of blood. And I'll give you one specific example. Just the week before last, a federal district court in Texas ruled that the 1978 Indian Child Welfare Act was unconstitutional. The Indian Child Welfare Act was one of the most significant and successful pieces of legislation passed by Congress in the last 50 years, one of the most important. The Indian Child Welfare Act was designed to protect Native nations from the scourge of breaking up Native families and separating Native American children from their tribe, clan, nation, and family. It's an immensely significant piece of legislation based on the fact that these are Native nations. The district court in a Texas case ruled that this was racial discrimination. Race-based discrimination. This racial language, this language that Indian identity is equated with race, that can be traced through identity through DNA, is ultimately damaging in terms of these very, very significant and pressing issues that afflict Native American communities around Canada and the United States. And there are issues way bigger than Elizabeth Warren in Native communities that we ought to be talking about.
Now, I want to listen to some of the comments she made, not in the video she released, but these are comments, I think, going back to 2012 when she ran for the Senate against Scott Brown in Massachusetts, and some of her own record and comments about her own ancestry came up then. And then I think I want to ask the guests how we identify, what identity means, and there's something really uncomfortable, I think, about not only what Jordan has been describing, you know, prove it, how much are you this or that, but you know, when we think about, so I think about my son, and he'll tell you, well, my heritage is Danish and English and Irish and German and Swedish. Okay, I mean, my actual last name is not Dawson, it's Gustafsson. So Michael and I share a Swedish last name, but do we live that way? How much do we connect with that? So let's listen to what some of Elizabeth Warren was saying in terms of how she knew growing up that she considered herself having Native ancestry.
My Aunt B has walked by that picture at least 1,000 times, remarked that her father, my papa, had high cheekbones like all of the Indians do, because that's how she saw it. And she said, and your mother got those same great cheekbones, and I didn't. She thought this was the bad deal she had gotten in life.
So, you know, that's just an example, Ronnie Pollack, going back to 2012. She's either representing something that she doesn't believe, or she really believes it, that this has for years been part of her family story. And you said you were disappointed in her. I know you've listened to all the remarks that she has made. Does it sway you at all? What do you think make of her at least assertion that identity is part of her?
Yeah, no, I disagree. You know, and again, going back to my original statement that it's hurtful, because what she represents is oftentimes, as a Native American person myself, you know, oftentimes throughout my entire life, I'll have people come up to me like, oh, I'm part Native, or I've heard that, you know, my grandfather, I mean, kind of much like, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren is saying, you know, my great, 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 great grandmother or grandfather was part Cherokee or part Lakota or something like that. And what it does is it diminishes our identity to a novelty item. And that's what it really feels like. Like, it's just this token thing that somebody gets to say and represent. Like, oh, but I, you know, I heard that many, many years ago, you know, throughout my family lineage, that there is some Native American, you know, blood in there. So, I'm going to tote that as well, too. And so it's hurtful in that regard, because it then just, you know, almost like, for lack of a better term, cheapens it to this novelty item.
Well, and so I think there's a difference between what you're saying there and sort of using it or claiming it or cheapening it versus, let's say you did a really good family tree and you figured out that you had Native ancestry going way back that you didn't know about. If that was true for me, I would find it, and I want to be careful with how I describe it. I would not claim it as sort of modern day me. I'm Native American. But I would tell my son, look, we are a human race where we are all on the same planet here. And unfortunately, European people in particular came to this continent and did really gruesome, terrible things that we have to understand with and sort of deal with. But part of all of us is some kind of connection. That's as far as I would take it, I think. Mm-hmm. That's different than saying, yeah, well, high cheekbones today, and, you know, and kind of in sort of cartoonish ways.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I think, too, when I can, you know, have that connection with my mom, that she lost her identity, you know, and how hurtful that was. And even my grandmother, she was an unfortunate survivor of, fortunate that she survived, but unfortunate that she was a member of the residential school system as well, too. So when somebody finds out that they have that very small blood quantum, you know, that dates back many, many, many generations, and then they say, oh, well, I'm the same as you. You know, my question is, well, did your parent suffer from losing their identity, you know, and what kind of damage was done as a result of that? Or did your grandparent, you know, or even maybe a great grandparent, were they, an unfortunate recipient of having to be forced into the residential school system?
I want to get all of our guests on this. I referenced Michael's piece. You wrote a little bit about this on your blog, about your last name, Oberg, and whether it means that you're Swedish. And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, we can't let Donald Trump off the hook for his role in
No,
this.
I tried to be very clear. What he has done is racist.
Yeah, and I know, and fair enough. But I think Ronnie's point about cheekbones and the stuff Elizabeth Warren raised, it's Donald Trump's doing the same thing. He's sort of saying that there's this set of physical characteristics, and if they aren't there, Native peoples don't exist. And the fact is, Native nations get to choose that part of their nationhood is they decide who they are, right? If you're in some communities, if your mother is a member, you're a member, and it doesn't really matter what you look like. Some use descent from a role, and so if you pick a certain these little items off an appearance checklist. And I'll ask students, you know, what do you see when you see an Indian? And they have 19th century Plains Indian stereotypes in their head, high cheekbones, long hair. They don't realize that these racial characteristics, I'm making air quotes, which is pointless to do on the radio, but it's that these racial markers don't mean anything in terms of membership and belonging to a community. So I just think this whole discussion with President Trump and Elizabeth Warren and now Lindsey Graham intruding this is so destructive and damaging. And I sure hope that Elizabeth Warren can give the best speech of her life to try to do some damage control on this, because I think she's got a lot of damage done too.
Ron, you've been pretty generous to Warren, more than some of the other guests, but how do you feel when she says, you know, look, this has always been part of this identity and understanding. And again, you heard the line about, you know, family cheekbones and things like that. Is there something to claim? Is there a sort of a remnant of that ancestry that's legitimate in your mind there?
Well, I think she may still have unintentionally misrepresented herself as being Native American, just because that's what she was told when she was growing up. I think the institution she's working for may have thought that she overcame some adversity that a lot of minorities and particularly Native Americans have to grow up with, and it doesn't seem that she did. So that part of the Native American piece that she just cannot connect with. And as far as having the high cheekbones as being proof of cultural identity, I think that's a pretty racist statement, and If they said that about body parts of other ethnic groups, which proves their racial identity, I really think the conversation would be concentrated on that comment right there.
Hmm. Roger Duby.
So there are a lot of ripple effects to the damage that this sort of claim creates. And part of one of the things that we haven't really discussed much is the impact that it has on young Native Americans and their self-image. A lot of Native Americans are already wrestling, the younger Native Americans are wrestling with the question, what exactly is my background? Who am I? How do I relate to the non-Native world? How do I find a place in that world? One of the reasons that I got involved with the American Indian Science and Engineering Society is because a lot of Native Americans do not have a scientific self-image. They don't have an image of themselves as being able to do science. That was erased very rapidly through the years as the Europeans sort of moved in. And so we've got a 300-year or so history of basically minimizing, diminishing, and ignoring scientific accomplishments that a lot of different Native communities had achieved over a very long period of time. And so Native American students are certainly very capable of doing science and math, but this self-image has been eroded away, and they just don't think of themselves that way. And it's a very difficult thing to overcome.
We're going to go to Jordan in a second. Ronnie wants to just add to that. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Yeah, I would like to see, I mean, if this is something, you know, that she's really trying to lay claim to, for her to really take a vested interest into what really affects our Native populations here today. And a lot of it, largely from our youth, is unfortunately this rampant epidemic of suicide. There is, I mean, the suicide rates for our Native youth here on Turtle Island, I mean, really in the U.S. and Canada, are unprecedented, and it's really unfortunate. And the other concern, too, for missing and murdered Indigenous women. This is another huge unfortunate aspect that is happening within our communities that gets no coverage at all. So if she were really vested in really, you know, wanting to kind of, you know, take on or take some part ownership to this, then I would love to see her get involved in those types of issues.
Okay. Jordan.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm actually pretty self-conscious about my cheekbones. Because it's such a... Sorry, Logan, you're funding this out the hard way. It's such a, like, stereotypical Native American, like, thing that everyone's like, oh, yeah, I sort of see it because of your cheekbones. And I'm like, the Native experience is so different than that. It's not just that one body part. And it is the thing that everyone seems to reference whenever we talk about Indigenous issues, in that, like, okay, this person has high cheekbones, so they're probably at least somewhat Native American, I guess, or something like that. And it is a very difficult thing to encounter over and over again, just sort of have that, your entire experience or, you know, culture be boiled down into just that one body part. And going off what my dad says, I work with wilderness education, and I actually recently had a coworker ask me about how their organization was portraying Native peoples, because they'll often go into ethnobotany where they talk about how Indigenous people will use plants in the area, et cetera, et cetera. And they show these, like, photos from probably the 20s or something like that of an Indigenous person doing some sort of craft with plant materials. And basically what they wanted me to say was the way they're portraying it was wrong. And I kind of tend to agree. I think it's sort of having these historical photos of Native peoples working with plant material as what people, as people's only exposure to Native Americans, is really harmful. I work in wilderness education because I actively do love being outside and working with children, but oftentimes I feel like people are asking me to sort of be that representation of Native Americans. And the reality is, a friend of mine said this really well one day. back in the 1500s, Europe was going really hard into sciences like metallurgy, architecture, etc., whereas native peoples were going really hard into the natural world sciences. And we got really good at it to the point that we are slowly catching up to knowledge native peoples had for hundreds of years. We've just discovered that maple syrup has all these health benefits. And we've been calling maple syrup a medicine for ever. And I do want to, part of my goal as a wilderness educator and a native person is to like demystify Native Americans to the minds of youth today, because it is such a different, it is in many ways like just an ethnicity. And that's sort of a weird thing to say, I think, especially in such a loaded context, but we are human beings or people with experiences that differ from other people because, you know, that's what the human experience is. And I constantly try to assert that over and over again. And so when I hear Elizabeth Warren talking about like my experience as a Native American, or for her speaking, her experience as a Native American, is hearing about her cheekbones over and over again, is, you know, it's just, it just doesn't match what I was feeling. Where when I was growing up, it was hard being in Florida and knowing that I'm Mohawk and Abenaki and not being able to like have that connection, not knowing anything about my language. And that's not to say anything, you know, against my dad, who's right here, but also, but it is, you know, that was my experience growing up, is saying like, God, there's this part of my culture that my dad is like imparting on me and teaching me. And I just, I don't see it anywhere because I'm in Florida. And that for me was my growing up experience as a native person. And for Indigenous Peoples Day this year, I was talking about my dad's experience as a kid and hearing the stories he got to hear from my grandfather and what, you know, just some of the stories I heard from my dad about that. And it's just a different experience than just like, this is what body part I have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've got a ton of email and calls to get through. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to try to work through some of the reaction we're getting. I'm going to start with an email. Leah writes to us and says, I'm sorry, I can't even listen to this conversation. It's crystal clear to me that Ms. Warren's current claim is nothing more than she had a Native American ancestor, like I claim to be Swedish, Welsh, and German, based on where my ancestors came from, and that she took the DNA test to prove that fact and defend herself from the liar-in-chief and his attempt to have his own facts at her expense. End of discussion. To me, anyone who's making Warren's claim all about themselves and their identity is just also using this stupid controversy to get attention for themselves and some agenda of their own. I am well aware of the genocide and continuing massively unjust treatment of Native peoples in this country, but that has nothing to do with this stupid argument. That's from Leah. Professor Oberg, you've been very critical of Senator Warren. Leah thinks it's all blown out of proportion and that we're missing it. What would you say to Leah?
Yeah, I kind of reject the premises of the email. I don't think people are taking advantage of this for their own agenda. I think Senator Warren's effort to respond to President Trump's taunts raise some serious problematic issue. Native nations are under siege. And again, I think that fundamental constitutionally recognized fact needs to be kept at the forefront, that Native Americans belong to Native nations. Sure, she claims her heritage. Sure, she was trying to counter Trump's nonsense. And it is nonsense, and it's terrible. But Native nations are being obliterated by the federal courts, right? You know, Ronnie mentioned missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and these continuing problems, right? I mean, I'm a historian. One could write a history of Native Americans from the arrival of Columbus to today using the mistreatment of Native American children as the thread weaving that narrative together. Missing and murdered Indigenous women going on, the foster care debacle in South Dakota, continuing problems in Canada with young people killing themselves in these residential schools. These are significant issues. And while I agree with the emailer that Donald Trump is terrible, and I agree to a certain extent that Senator Warren was just trying to get out of that, try to put it to bed once and for all. Senator Warren probably thought Monday was going to be a great day. But these are big issues.
So to your phone calls we go. We've got a lot to get through, and our guests are going to have a lot more to say on these issues. Dan in Brighton is first. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I have a lot of comments, unfortunately. One is that Jordan is Jewish by Jewish law, and in my checkered career, I've run across several people who are of Native American ancestry and belong to synagogues. So any synagogue in Rochester, I'm sure, would welcome Jordan or a Jewish youth group. Secondly, even at the height of Jim Crow, a person had to have at least one great-great-grandparent to be considered black, and these people, and she's got less than that, and Hitler was one grandparent to be considered Jewish. And I have very high cheekbones, and I'm sure I don't have a drop of Native American DNA in my chromosomes.
Dan, I want to interrupt you. I have no idea what you're trying to say here, though.
These are just random comments about how silly this whole thing is.
It's silly? Okay. So, but when you say, well, Jordan is Jewish by Jewish law, what point are you trying to make, Dan?
That he can be both groups.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm biracial. Like, and I sort of self-identify that way whenever people ask me about my racial background, is that I'm biracial.
Okay. Dan, I don't really know where else to go with that. But, you know, with that, let me go ahead and take us to a comment I got from another listener who is asking, there's plenty to blame to go around here, he writes. Trump demeans people when he calls Warren Pocahontas. Warren and the progressives are to blame for identity politics gone mad. Is it correct that if we're going to get to a meritocracy, these discussions need to end soon? And the person who wrote that says, Trump, yes, it's a problem, but Democrats stuck on identity politics. And this is just another example. Ron, you're shaking your head. Go ahead.
No, I was
just saying, you're saying, don't come to me with this. Anybody want to jump in here?
Look, I teach. Americans are phenomenally ill-informed about the history of Native peoples on this continent. They're phenomenally ill-informed about the current status of Native nations and the place of Native nations in a federal system. This isn't identity politics. This is pretty fundamental rights. Again, you know, we want to pretend the Constitution matters. We, the people, gave to the United States government the right to regulate commerce with the Indian tribes. Over time, the courts have obliterated that. And the national government has all kinds of control over the internal workings of American Indian nations. And you can tell me more about Canada, where the current state is, but there too, right? Mm-hmm. This is not just identity politics. These are significant issues.
Okay. Do you want to add to that, Ronnie?
No, I mean, Canada has actually really been on the forefront. They have Truth and Reconciliation.
Right.
So really, it's a charge that they put out to all Canadian citizens to and educate themselves on the travesties that have occurred historically and how Native Nations, First Nations people currently still suffer as a result from that, right, and what they can do as a Canadian citizen, what kind of ownership they can take to play their part in helping to rectify some of that.
But I think the emailer is going in the direction of those who say, if we focus on this person is African American, this person is white, this person is Native, this person is not, that we lose the individual contributions and we're hung up on identity and it's all we focus on. Again, I'm not endorsing, I'm just responding to a common complaint I hear. And this is coming from an emailer who claims Democratic status but says he thinks the Democrats on the left are too focused on identity politics, and this is just an extension of that.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you know, I mean, Senator Warren, she made it this way, you know, by taking this step and you know, kind of answering to President Trump's question and, I don't know, just kind of tactic, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just my observation, and I would say this to people, writers like Sam Harris who make this point and many others. it really is easy to say that you're not playing identity politics when you're in the dominant position in a society. When you're a white male, generally, and you notice everybody else is talking about identity politics, you're the one who is sort of immune to that. Well, you've benefited from a system that has been unequal for many, many decades. And what you can't see is that often you are actually involved in identity politics. So yeah, that's all. That's the only observation I make there. Go ahead,
yeah, man. I guess a possible alternative to the way she handled it was when her ethnicity got called into question, she could have responded with, why does it matter?
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think it could have went anywhere after that.
I agree that she has poured some gasoline on the fire this week.
Right.
With this. Back to the phones we go, and this is Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, guys. Enjoy the conversation. But I think we have to remember how we got to this point. It's more than just Trump referring to her as Pocahontas. If we take a look at Senator Warren's background, what she was taking as family lore or maybe pride and Native American ancestry, she was advancing for personal reasons in the climb up an academic ladder. I mean, she was portraying herself as a Native American or Native American blood without really knowing that, and she was benefiting or trying to benefit from her in her personal life through advancement and as she was climbing up academic ladders. So it's interesting now that we're focusing in on, well, you know, can she almost culturally misappropriate being Native American? But she put herself in this position far before she became a senator. And I think the other interesting thing is if we're going to rely on genetic testing to be able to lay claim to heritage, well, I would be interested to know about the lady in the Pacific Northwest who portrayed herself as African American.
Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, and if she took a genetic test and had some sub-Saharan genetics, would she be able then to point to it and say, "See, I was right. You're all over the top. I am." I can portray myself as African American.
Tom, I got to jump in. Tom, thanks for the phone call. You're not the first to bring up Rachel Dolezal in regards to this. Panel.
I think we're all agreeing that DNA testing shouldn't be used as part of a cultural measure. And there a number of people have looked into this and made the case that Elizabeth Warren didn't benefit from this claim, whatever her intentions were. I don't know. But she hasn't benefited from it, especially now, right? So I think it's this is a bigger issue than Elizabeth Warren.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Yeah. There was I don't know if you saw it, but there was a statement put out by the Cherokee Nation Secretary of State. Did you see that?
Absolutely. And they essentially said DNA testing is not the way we do this. Mm-hmm. And that this was sort of crude and clumsy and not how you determine membership, and that they essentially repudiated and condemned the entire video by Elizabeth Warren, exactly. Which is not something that the Cherokee Nation is sort of prone of doing. They haven't really been political,
right?
In terms of what this whole debate about Elizabeth Warren, but I think they felt like they were pushed too far here. And I can't believe that she wouldn't have called them before releasing this video. There's so many things that you go, who is running the ship here? But anyway, let me get back to your phone calls, and I'm going to turn to, let's see here. We have Mike in Newark, if you're still there. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say I wanted this to be an apolitical comment because I personally just I like the couple comments I've heard so far. There's issues bigger than Elizabeth Warren, and we shouldn't – I know that – the other guest said he identifies as more than just one thing, and that's fine. And I appreciate the culture because I'm proud to be in this part of New York where the Haudenosaunee were here before us, and our government owes a lot to them. The Canandaigua Treaty is a fascinating story to me. I wish our government would work more with Native nations instead of just treating them as subservient, basically, or, wardens of the state. But I think that America would be the strongest nation in the world if we teamed up with the other nation that's already here. So I just want to say apolitical. Thank you. Bye.
Mike, thank you. Thanks for the phone call. And with that, I want to just ask our panel to respond from an email that comes from a listener named Greg, who just wanted to know, essentially, can you ask your guests to explain if it's not DNA? And I think everyone agrees that DNA testing is not the way to say, yes, you are this or not. But he's saying, can anyone claim anything if it's not DNA? And that may be the other extreme. I don't think people feel that way. But let me kind of go around the entire panel. I'll start with Ronnie. What do you think, Ronnie?
Yeah, there typically, you know, there's a blood quantum measure that can be done. So in the States, as far as I can recollect, that most nations, you know, require that to be a minimum of 25%. I know in Canada, the blood quantum has to be 50%. And then there's the other, which I think has already been mentioned as well, too, like a lineal descendancy from someone named on the tribe's base roll, you know, that you can lay claim to and have proof that is, you know, of your family lineage.
Okay, Roger Doobie.
So over time, we've migrated from the original concept of blood quantum that was instituted by the American government on the nations to determine who would get the benefits of their aid and who wouldn't. This evolved over time until more recently, in about the 70s or so, the nations started to take back the sovereignty that we had. And in doing that, one of the things that was looked at closely was blood quantum and exactly how would we determine who's enrolled and who's not. And so we've come up with a hybrid, at least with the Ganyankahage, a hybrid of the blood quantum, but also a demonstration of lineage that is there, documented with membership and even birth certificates in some cases. And that's a strong combination. I think ultimately it would be good to move more away from the blood quantum and because that pushes us down that DNA path, and I don't like the DNA path.
Okay, Ron Garrow?
Well, I also don't like the DNA path, and I also don't agree with the us being registered by the tribe and that sort of thing, because there was a time in this world where women had to go off into the forest and have children by themselves, and they were not documented, these children, because the United States government would come and take these children away and put them in residential boarding schools, and parents wouldn't see them. So these children were never put on the rolls, and they have Native American lineage, but they just can't prove it. So who are we to tell these people whose grandparents were and great-grandparents were brave enough to go off and have these children without any assistance off in the forest and, you know, tell them that they're not Native, because they are.
Okay. Professor Oberg.
Native nations are allowed to determine their own membership. Some use blood quantum, some don't. There's problems with blood quantum. Is it using a fraction? It can never increase. It will always decrease over time as people meet other people and so on. Tribes do have to have barriers, and many tribes have membership offices because they are flooded by people who want to claim Native identity. And amongst those who claim that identity are people legitimately reconnecting to their heritage, but also charlatans and posers and wannabes who for various reasons want to get in on into a tribe because they feel there's certain benefits that may accrue to them for that reason. So the answer to the caller is no. No, you don't get to – we can't claim anything we want. Native nations are have very good sense of who belongs and who doesn't, and they have means on their own for deciding who belongs and who doesn't.
Well, how about outside of Native context? How about a cultural context and racial context?
Yeah, I mean, look – yeah, I mean, my kids, they're going to have to make a choice at some point, right?
Yep.
And that's going to be up to them to decide. It'll be up to the broader society in some sense to see how it's construed and how convincing it is down the road. Look, what I think we see is in questions like the call or the email is that notion that white people are claiming other things. Rachel Dolezal is a crazy example, and I don't know that all that much about her story. I think it's just so problematic, these identity issues when it comes to white people deciding who gets to be what.
Mm-hmm. And so the last word of the hour goes to Jordan Duby on the line. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, Blood Quantum scares me because it's something that, you know, I'm in close to being 30 and I'm starting to think about what's my future going to look like if I have children. And I'm a little scared. Like, if I have kids, do I get to tell them that they're Mohawk or Abenaki? Or do I have to say, like, I am, but you're not? Do they have to tell their kids that? It's a really, it makes sense on a very large political and social scale when you're looking at it from distance. But when you get down to the individual, there is at one point going to be that line that says, I'm sorry, you can't be Native, and even though your father is or your mother is. And I don't know if I have a good solution for that, because in the end, it's why I identify as biracial so often, because it more accurately describes who I am. But also, when we have these really hard lines that basically say you can't be this or that, based on something like Blood Quantum, it raises a lot of questions. Which is why oftentimes I tell people that being Native American is more about your cultural involvement and your ability to, like, connect and be involved with the culture and the experiences you had when you were growing up. There is a political aspect to it, which involves being on the rolls and, you know, having that tribal membership. but otherwise, and, like, that's a very different thing, but otherwise, yeah.
Well, Roger and Jordan Duby, we appreciate your perspective, father and son, one in studio, one on the West Coast. Thanks for taking the time to both of you. Thanks, Jordan.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, now we'll go on.
Thank you, Roger. And our thanks to Rod and Garrow, Akwesasne Mohawk Bear Clan, and cultural advisor for Surge Rock.
Yeah, I'll go on to Giwahi.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate that. And Ronnie Pollock, member of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation Eagle Clan, executive director of the Native American Cultural Center, and host of Two Canoes with Ronnie Pollock. Always nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, now we go.
Our thanks to Professor Michael Loberg, who had to split. Our thanks to the engineer, John Andrus, producer Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member-Supported Public Radio.